John Smith on tenor, ladies and gentlemen.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Automation is the key. I am Dr. Jazz P.
All right, let's start with something positive. We have genuinely better and better looking COVID updates over the last few weeks globally and in the United States, and today is no exception. Questions we're asking right now before we look at the data. Is this the last wave? We don't know. What will the winter look like? We're not yet sure. How much more do we need to vaccinate? Quite a bit, but we're not totally sure. Many other questions as well. Let's start with cases. Since the daily Delta variant peak of about 167,000 cases per day, the United States is now down 39% in daily average cases to about 102,000 per day. Outrageously high. But as more and more people get vaccinated, cases will mean less and less, Dr. Isaac Bogosh last week told us, but we're not there yet. And for now, 39% daily case reduction is a very good thing. In terms of deaths, in general, you know this by now, rule of thumb, deaths follow cases by 3 to 4 weeks. Deaths are continuing to do so. Deaths now down about 20% per day from their Delta peak. The Delta peak was about 1,900 deaths per day. We're now down to about 1,600 deaths per day. Still a really high number. Remember that a typical flu season is about 36,000 deaths a year. That's like 100 deaths a day. So right now, we're at 16 times a typical flu season's daily deaths. 16 times. That's an interesting metric, by the way, to compare when we think about the relative risk of death from COVID when we're out there. How does this compare to a flu season over the course of a year? And the truth is, it's not really like this because your 36,000 flu deaths are concentrated during flu season. That's why we call it flu season. But on average, 100 flu deaths a day is what the U.S. sees in a year. We're now at 1,600 COVID deaths per day. Globally, we are seeing cases continuing down about 35% since the Delta peak. And then, of course, global deaths as well have peaked at about 10,300 a day. Those are now down to about 7,000 global deaths a day. That's a reduction of about a third, 31% to be exact, in daily global deaths. So that's good. Now, how about vaccination? Well, as we talked about last week or the week before, the U.S. is getting embarrassed. The U.S. is rapidly declining in terms of the percentage of people vaccinated in the U.S. compared to other countries, particularly compared to other so-called rich countries. Take a look at this. The leaders in vaccinated percentage are the United Arab Emirates, tiny country, followed by Portugal, which has 10 million people, Chile, Spain, Singapore, Uruguay, Canada, Denmark, China, Ireland, Italy, Finland, France, Japan, UK, Brazil, Germany. Then you get to the United States in vaccinated percentage, just ahead of Turkey and just ahead of Mexico. What happened to us? We had all the vaccines earlier than anyone, and we just can't do it. People aren't getting the vaccine. It's horrifying what's going on. It's embarrassing what's going on. And we've talked about it so much. And then lastly, the global vaccination effort overall has also slowed down. Globally, we had gotten up to about 45 million vaccines per day around the world. We're now down to roughly half of that, about 23 million vaccine doses per day. If you look at the global population, that means each day we're vaccinating 0.29% of the global population. Call it 0.3. Just under a third of 1% of the world is getting a dose each day. Getting that back up to 45 million doses a day, even 50, 60 million doses a day would be absolutely huge. But the good news, no thanks to the deniers, no thanks to the anti-vaxxers and those spreading the disinformation and misinformation, cases down significantly, deaths also down. Let's hope it continues. We'll check in next week and hope that the numbers are looking even better. Hey, I'm going to show you some stunning video of Republican Senator Lindsey Graham being brutally booed for saying, you should think about getting that vaccine. This happened to Trump, and I'll remind you of that. Daily Beast reporting, Republicans shout down Lindsey Graham for pushing the vaccine. This is from our friend Will Sommer, who's been a guest on the program before, who writes, Senator Lindsey Graham was booed by Republican activists Saturday after he suggested they should consider taking the coronavirus vaccine, making him the latest prominent Republican to face a backlash from the party's grassroots over the vaccine. Speaking at a county Republican event in Somerville, South Carolina, Graham said he received the vaccine and encouraged audience members to take it as well. Graham cited statistics showing most patients are unvaccinated. and the crowd only got more angry. Let's look at this video. We're going to look at the Trump video as well. Here's Lindsay, and listen to the crowd.
If you haven't had the vaccine, you ought to think about getting it, because if you're my age...
No, they say.
I didn't tell you to get it. You ought to think about it. No!
Well, they don't even want to think. It's actually quite stunning. They're told, just think about it. They don't even want to do that. It's actually emblematic of this Republican Party.
I'm glad I got it. 92% of the people in the hospitals in South Carolina are unvaccinated. Got me. 92%. True.
They don't believe him. They at least claim not to believe him. He says, most people in the hospital are unvaccinated. No. No.
Well, I'm with you on let's don't mandate it.
Right.
I'm with you that it's probably unconstitutional. But I am not going to legitimize what I think is the truth. The truth is that unvaccinated
I'm going to lose my job in 60 days. You got to stop it now.
Okay, so this guy's screaming, this gentleman, although I don't really know if he's a gentleman, this guy says he's going to lose his job in 60 days if he doesn't get vaccinated. He wants Lindsay to stop it.
From who?
From the U.S. government, the Navy.
Yeah, so I'm with you. So I just don't think, are you active?
No,
I'm going to
want to sit off civil, yeah. Sir.
Well, here's the one thing.
I am a veteran.
Okay, I'm a veteran too. How many of you have taken measles shots?
So Lindsay tries another approach. How many of you have been vaccinated against measles? And the crowd is prepared. They're prepared. They say, well, but that's not the same.
In the military, they can say you got to get vaccinated. I think that's a dumb idea. You know why? We shouldn't be driving people away from serving. Like if you're a healthcare worker.
Yeah, we have plenty of soldiers.
And you don't want to get vaccinated? Why do you want to get people to quit being nurses? I trust you to make a decision good for you. So are you against the vaccine?
No, I'm not.
Half the crowd says yes, half the crowd says no.
A mandate.
That's what I'm at.
How do we stop it?
You're going to have to get somebody who...
Yeah, so that guy is completely unhinged. So there's Loony Lindsay getting... But he's trying to not be loony. He's trying to be sensible, Lindsay, and it doesn't go well. This is what happens when the monster you created turns against you. Here's a reminder of when it happened to Trump. This was at a rally not long ago. Remember this, guys? This was wild.
3 days, less than 9 months, and it's great. And you know what? I believe totally in your freedoms. I do. You got to do what you have to do.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I recommend take the vaccines. I did it. It's good. Take the vaccines. But you got that's okay. That's all right. You got your freedoms, but I happen to take the vaccine. If it doesn't work, you'll be the first to know, okay? I'll call up Alabama and say, hey, you know what? But it is working. But you do have...
They do not like it. You built this monster, and now it is biting the owner's head off, the creator's head off. Folks, this is increasingly a Republican virus. You know, remember that image from earlier this week? The last 100 COVID deaths have mostly been... in Trumplandia. I showed you this earlier in the week. You look at a map of the last 100,000 COVID deaths. It looks like the map of where they voted for Trump most heavily. The strategy, the approach here seems to be owning the liberals by getting COVID and dying or something like that. They believe they're proving a point in this way. And at this point, people like Lindsey Graham, who's cuckoo, but slightly less cuckoo than some of the others, he seems to realize we gain nothing by not getting vaccinated. Just our voters die at a greater rate than their voters. And that's probably not good for elections. It's probably not good for economies. It's not good for anything. It has become a bizarre. Is it a Pyrrhic victory in the sense that they don't get vaccinated, but then some of them die? And it's a win, but you're sustaining a loss in that people are dying. I don't know what to call it. Maybe just dumb. Maybe we don't need to go and try to be more sophisticated than what it calls for. Maybe it's just dumb and bad, a bad idea. But they turned on Lindsay just like they did on Donald Trump. Reminder, Tuesday, October 19, we're doing a live viewer town hall. Everybody can participate. It will be streamed live on the new YouTube channel. That's the Pacman Live YouTube channel. You can find it at youtube.com/PacmanLive or davidpacman.com/PacmanLive. 6 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday, October 19th. Everybody's welcome to call in. We will take call after call, and members will get priority. So why not sign up at joinpacman.com? So you probably didn't know this, but this program is mostly funded by viewers like you, listeners like you, who sign up for the membership program on our website. We do an extra show every day for our members. I would love for you to join the membership ranks, and you can do so at joinpacman.com. I want to talk about comedian and actor Russell Brand in this segment. Now, I'm not going to do the lazy, he's an anti-vaccine nut sort of thing that's been floating around. There have been some articles written that straight up say Russell Brand is anti-vax. I find it lazy, quite frankly. There is a Daily Beast article called "Comedian Russell Brand Has Become a Powerful Voice for Anti-Vaxxers," which comes maybe a little closer to the reality of what's going on. And the way we're going to look at some clips, we're going to look at a lot of different things. The way that I characterize this is that Russell Brand is definitely dancing around on the topic of vaccination. He's asking questions and making suggestions, all in ways that encourage vaccine hesitancy or skepticism without like really explicitly taking an anti-vaccine position. Now, one can make the argument that doing it the way he's doing it might be more pernicious than straight up just doing anti-vax propaganda. I don't know what his intentions are, and we'll talk about that at the end. We'll look at the material first. But what's clear is that whatever he's been doing, it has worked well to build an audience, and in particular, around these sort of contrarian ideas, as we might call them. And that may play a role in how he's choosing to frame issues. Maybe he's being encouraged to do this stuff because it's doing well. I don't know. Let's start with the evolution, and we're going to hit kind of a few different points and go from there. Here is Russell Brand many times talking about how he is neutral about everything and just sort of look into everything. He has no opinion or advice for you about COVID or vaccines or treatments. He's neutral. Let's take a listen.
I am Switzerland when it comes to this subject. No view at all. I am merely a floating series of molecules, spores in space that through the spike protein could attach to something. Now I'm completely neutral. You can do your own research into the impact of coronavirus. And no, I would suggest that you look beyond the mainstream media into the impact of vaccines and the efficacy of vaccines and make your own decisions. Okay. I have no opinion.
None.
I'm not offering any advice or suggestions or even opinions around the treatment of COVID, just measuring and judging the conversation that takes place around it.
Okay. So maybe it's good to be neutral sometimes, I guess, but the really important takeaway here is neutrality is not objectivity. Neutrality and objectivity are two different things. If I say I'm neutral between water being necessary for human life or water being the biggest scam on earth that humans don't really need to live, I'm staking out a position of neutrality, but there's nothing objective about it. I'm just completely wrong. I'm not adhering to the facts in my neutrality. I'm neutral, but I'm completely wrong. So that's one reason to always be skeptical about loudly professed neutrality, because neutrality and objectivity are two different things. So let's now look at Russell Brand's first statement that I could find about COVID. This was back in March of 2020, March 13th of 2020, I believe. This was just a few days after Trump made the big speech about we're closing this, we're closing that, and there's a virus. And it's already sort of like a little bit woo-woo and starting to, this is the type of stuff that lends itself to people looking to you to justify their own skepticism and disbelief, even about things you're not directly talking about. Take a look.
My personal take on it is it's a reminder that reality lies below the surface. The deepest realities cannot be seen. You know, microbiology can at any point alter the game. And that's what about what's happening even beneath that, held in fields of invisible energy. So I suppose, you know.
So it's, you know.
Wash your hands.
Yeah.
Be sensible. But significantly remember how often we live in concepts and constructs that are not real and are not beneficial.
So, you know, I guess wash your hands, but at the same time, you know, we can't really see a lot of this stuff. And I don't know, it's starting to get a little bit squishy, okay? Then we cut to this year where it's really ramped up. As his follower base has grown, this type of stuff has ramped up. This is now, we're going from last March 13 to this September 13, just under a month ago. Russell Brand says the problem of COVID is small compared to that of the vaccine mandate. So now we're really getting into some meaty stuff for the anti-vax crowd, whatever Russell's view is of vaccines per se.
The problem of coronavirus is small compared to the problem of the framework that we are discovering holds it. A framework of disdain, contempt, and conflict. As long as we forget fundamental basic values, kindness, open communication, tolerance, if we forget those things,
yeah,
there is no society worth saving, no matter what you believe.
Now, this is one of those things where, like, yeah, kindness, okay, sure, sure. But the problem of COVID is still a big problem. And this idea of this minimizing, again, whatever his views are, it feeds into the people who want to say we don't need the vaccine or the mandates are definitely bad or whatever. Now, here's a little bit of a break into something that also is part of this. Russell spoke with Tim Pool. Tim Pool is this guy. We've interviewed him before. He said he used to be on the left, or he sort of still claims to be. 90% of his content is anti-democratic. I've talked to him about it. But, you know, it should not come as a shock to many of you that he said he voted for Trump in 2020. So this is another one of these, like, I'm on the left. I'm kind of an enlightened centrist. Really, it just seems like at least you're mostly doing content that criticizes the left and you're voting for Trump. OK, so Russell brings on Tim Pool and they do this shtick about we're very close to civil war, very, very close to civil war. And this is a trope now. The left is ripping us apart. They're pushing us to the brink of civil war.
You used to say more frequently, at least as far as I'm aware, that you felt that, I guess in the final days of Trump, that America was on the brink of some kind of civil war.
I still do.
Do you?
Yeah, there's been polling data that I think may, evolve that opinion. Notably, there was a YouGov data that showed, I think it was YouGov, that there's five regions in the United States. There's the Northeastern, there's the Southern, there's the Heartland, there's the West and the Mountain regions. Mm-hmm. And in each region, there was a large plurality of people who wanted to secede from the Union and form their own regional mm-hmm. governments, essentially. If you normalize for population by each state, I did the math, you end up with 37.2% of the U.S. population wanting the country to break apart.
Okay, now, I don't exactly know the normalization he's referring to. I know what normalization means. I remember we talked about that poll. I don't exactly know. I don't know if he means, maybe he doesn't even mean normalization. He just says it's extrapolated. I think maybe Tim doesn't know the difference between extrapolating and normalizing. What he's not mentioning is that those disproportionately wanting to secede are Southern Republicans. And this entire Civil War narrative that he and some others have been pushing, sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly, I will grant that it's not always explicit, is that the left's intolerance or unwillingness to do whatever is what's pushing us to the brink of civil war. The reality is that, you know, the closest thing that we got to a civil war starting that I can recall in the last many years was the January 6th insurrection. It was exclusively Trumpists who did it. And even if you look at secession and civil war are two different things. It's disproportionately Southern Republicans who want to do it. And this is the type of stuff that Russell platforms. I would say it's not responsible platforming in that he's not really ready to rebut the substance of what's being said. OK, then Russell Brand shares a tweet which seems to be telling people how to get around COVID safety measures during his comedy tour. OK, this is called the 33 tour. Russell Brand tweeted this, and it's 33 tour info. And it says, there are some misunderstandings around the venue requirements for the 33 tour. This should address the concerns we've seen expressed. No venue requires you to be double vaccinated. So that's sort of like, you can just go and get one and not the second, and you're going to be able to get in. Most venues do not ask for any certification. Again, saying it's kind of the honor system at a lot of places. You can probably go without being vaccinated. Some require proof of a negative test. And then saying, if you have a ticket that requires you to have a test and you don't want one, we'll move your ticket to another venue. It might require travel. So again, it's all kind of slippery. Like, no one of these things is that egregious, but it's all fomenting a particular line of thought from the people that follow him. Okay, so now we'll go to a more recent clip. In this clip, Russell Brand suggests looking beyond the mainstream media for information about vaccines. And what's really slippery and squishy about this one is, I'm the first to agree, you can't just trust corporate media for everything. But the implication here is that there's this whole other hidden truth that's not being presented in the corporate media about vaccines. And if you're aware that the general narrative, which is accurate, is, well, the vaccines are quite safe and quite effective. If you're being told there's some other completely different narrative without him telling you anything anti-vax per se, you start to think, wow, what am I not being told? Let's take a listen.
Do your own research into the impact of coronavirus. And I would suggest that you look beyond the mainstream media into the impact of vaccines and the efficacy of vaccines and make your own decisions. I have no opinion.
Right. He still has no opinion. But again, it's this idea that you may not be getting told all the things you should be getting told, and you've got to look for it. Here is Russell Brand then on vaccine passports, which he equates to totalitarianism.
It's very interesting how this particular issue is being treated with a very specific and, one might argue, totalitarian mindset, where elsewhere our cultures are built on principles of individualism. Like, you know, while you're an individual, you're responsible for your own life. You're responsible if you're in prison or if you can't make a go of life yourself. That's your fault. That's your responsibility. So it's being regarded uniquely. And I suppose to someone like me that's skeptical and sometimes downright cynical about government, the agenda of governments, the relationships of government with big business, something like this makes me concerned about the direction we're heading.
So again, it's just vaguely alluding to the idea of freedom. Freedom is not anybody requiring a vaccine, for sure. That's absolutely not it. And then this is just where it starts to get really weird. Russell says he saw a dead fish in the river, and that seems like a bad omen from the standpoint of totalitarian vaccine passports.
Whatever your views on the pandemic, where it came from, how it came to be here,
yeah,
what the impact of it is on a sort of individual, social and cultural level, the fact is that now the response to it does align with some people's opinions about a government agenda, i.e. further control, further invasion, further regulation of your life. The very idea that you might not be able to attend a public event without showing a passport, that concerns me. Other people might say, well, we've all got national insurance numbers and stuff like that. I don't know, man. The other day I was on the River Wye and I saw dead fish in that river. When you see things that feel like an indication of something foreboding, it's, I think, foolish not to respond to it.
So that's strange. OK, that now it starts to get really strange. And then just to give you kind of like just a final tour through this, here is Russell saying Russiagate, quote, Russiagate was cooked up by the Clintons, which is becoming very popular among the right.
The world moves so fast, there's almost no time for history. It seems like years ago that we were hearing that Trump was colluding with Russia, that he wouldn't have won the election without Russia, that his whole presidency was a kind of Putin plot. Well, there's now serious evidence that it was the Clinton campaign and Hillary Clinton acolytes that were directly involved in the generation of what has proven to be a conspiracy. Untrue. Think about how much media you watched.
So this is just a, straight up right wing talking point. And then lastly, here he says vaccine fact checkers may not be trustworthy.
You have to be open minded and open eyed about the reality of the information you're being presented. Elsewhere, in another one of our videos, we talk about the sort of appetite for apartheid, like people who have not been vaccinated should be pushed this way. You know, I don't have a strong opinion about what you should do with your life. You should be free. I should be free. We should be free to talk. We should be free to disagree. But what I have concerns about are the legislation and regulation around the way that information is communicated, information is censored, because I want to feel like I can trust people. I want to feel like I can trust the media. I want to feel like I can trust the government. I don't enjoy sitting here doing, actually, I do enjoy sitting here doing this. But like, I feel that the systems themselves are so dependent on their own sort of corrupt, spiraling interrelationship that it's not possible for it to operate freely. I don't even think there's anyone evil at Facebook or at CDC or whatever. I just think there's just a big sort of tidal rolling of profiteering that's so sort of embedded that people can't see that it's happening. It's bigger than them. That's what a system is. A system is like we're all a set of nodes operating in a broader trajectory, a broader telos, and none of us can sort of like sort of step outside and go, hang on, what's going on? Is this the best way to do things? And if you can't see a situation like a fact checker being funded by people whose fact it's checking, it is quite odd, then you're not open-minded enough.
Yeah. And I know so anyway, even the fact checkers maybe cannot be trusted. Okay, so what's the bottom line here? The difficulty here is that this is not like straight up anti-vax, and calling Russell Brand anti-vax is lazy. It doesn't really encompass it. There's no real single anti-vaccine clip. He's dancing. He's encouraging anti-vax people to become more anti-vax. Not saying he's doing it on purpose, but he is. The videos he pumps out all have the same sort of like tinge, which we're going to look at. Problems with the vaccine, studies against the vaccine, famous proponent of the vaccine who you can't trust. And he hints one way while claiming to be neutral, but clearly he's not objective. I mean, just we'll look at some of his clip titles here. The Wuhan lab leak debate just got even something else. Let's look at which are the vaccine related ones. How big pharma CEOs plan to profit from keeping you maybe it's sick. Can we really trust vaccine fact checkers? Thought Biden couldn't sink any lower. Think again. Vaccine apartheid. Don Lemon's COVID bombshell. Good science or irresponsible? This is why you can't trust big pharma. Shocking Wuhan evidence, etc. It's vaccine mandates and assault on your bodily whatever. It's actually quite similar to the Jimmy Dore idea. It's very similar to what Jimmy Dore does. Fauci has no answer. Study vaccines being administered incorrectly. Vax side effects reported. Sudden hearing loss. Vaccines cause hurricanes. Biden says vaccine cause hurricanes, which is just a muddle. It's just, you know, that's kind of the Biden dementia story. COVID surge among vaccinated. It's the exact same type of idea. A couple different things could be happening. One, some individuals are just taking their distrust of the pharmaceutical industry, which we should all have to some degree, and broadly applying it to COVID and to the vaccine in a way that maybe is well intended, but is very much misguided. For others, this is a straight up grift. I don't know which one it is for Russell Brand. I genuinely don't know which category I put him in. Taking pharmaceutical skepticism too far, grift, delusional, I don't know. But the evolution of Russell Brand is giving significant comfort, so to speak, and encouragement to those already skeptical of just going out and getting vaccinated. Let me know what you think it is that's going on with Russell Brand. So things continue to really just go horribly wrong for Facebook. We talked yesterday about the Monday outage of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. We talked about the Sunday unveiling of who is this whistleblower that released thousands of documents about internal Facebook documents about Facebook knows about the harm that's caused to different people by its platforms. Francis Haugen, the name of the whistleblower. And I played yesterday for you an interview with one Facebook executive on NPR, and it was just terrible. Just the guy seemed shaken by the obvious questions, unable to answer in a coherent way. Yesterday, we had testimony from the whistleblower, Francis Haugen. And then afterwards, we had a very unusual interview with Facebook's vice president for content policy, Monica Bickert, on CNN, where, again, I don't know if these interviews go horribly wrong because the people are unprepared or because the facts simply aren't on their side. And there's really no way to come off looking even remotely coherent and sensible. So first, let's start with a CNN article just quickly outlining the takeaways from yesterday's testimony by the Facebook whistleblower. Francis Haugen yesterday testified before a Senate subcommittee. The big takeaways, okay? Facebook's mechanics further the spread of misinformation. One big takeaway. Second takeaway, Facebook has taken limited action to address existing misinformation. We really knew this, but again, further confirmed. Facebook has misled the public about the negative effects of its platforms on children and teens, especially young girls, despite public statements from Mark Zuckerberg and others saying it's pretty good. In short, internal documents show they know about the negative effects, and Facebook knows its platform enables human exploitation. So let's get to this interview that took place. This is an interview with Monica Bickert, VP for Content Policy on Facebook, and it's very similar to the one yesterday that I played for you from NPR. Here we have video, and it's deflections and just kind of like strange, not very credible denials.
Is a current Facebook executive. Monica Bickert is a vice president for content policy at Facebook. Ms. Bickert, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I know you just heard that report. And so I want to get your take on what Francis Haugen has said. Is it true that Facebook uses these algorithms that push inflammatory content because that drives more clicks and engagement?
It is not true. And I want to say, I think there have been a lot of mischaracterizations today about what those stolen documents say and about the work that we are doing to keep Facebook safe.
But just so I'm clear, I just want to be clear.
This is a key interjection. What specifically are you denying?
You do not use, you're saying, what part is not true? You don't push out inflammatory, controversial content because you know that heightens engagement?
We do the opposite, in fact.
Now it's where it gets silly. You push out non-engaging content? Come on. It now gets, you know, I think a better way to answer this would be to say, unfortunately, in our world, the most salacious news is more likely to be shared by users. This is human nature. It's not unique to Facebook. I sound like a flunky now for, you know, a PR person for these companies. This is not unique to Facebook. We can't control the fact that a lot of the stuff that's most salacious that people want to share is fake news and disinformation. What we can do, however, is have an algorithm that will, number one, label it as such, and number two, not prioritize. Okay, but no, we do the opposite. What? You push out stuff people don't find interesting? Come on.
If you look in our Transparency Center, you can actually see that we demote, meaning we reduce the visibility of engagement bait, click bait. And why would we do that? One big reason is because for the long-term health of our services, we want people to have a good experience. We want them to want to continue to come back to these sites and connect with the people they care about.
What gets people coming back to the site is that it's a source of titillating, rage-inducing, fear-inducing material. That's what keeps people coming back. It would be Facebook doesn't think, you know, if we keep doing this for 100 years, then no, it doesn't work that way.
For years to come.
I have a question about that. Do you deny that teenage girls are not having a good experience on Instagram?
The majority of young people on Instagram are having a good experience, and that is borne out by the documents that were stolen, including the Instagram youth survey of about 40 Instagram users.
Guys, 40 users, 40 on a platform that has hundreds of millions. Are there billions of people on Instagram?
These were teens who were already struggling with mental health issues. And on all of the issues, the majority of boys and girls said that Instagram either makes things better or doesn't have a material impact on their experience.
Hold on, just one thing, I'd let you say your piece. You're saying that you do not have internal research that shows that depression and suicidal thoughts go up for teenage girls, as do thoughts of eating disorders.
I'm saying that for the majority of teens...
That's really slippery. The question is, Do you have internal data that says it's hurting young kids, including girls? What Monica Bickert says is, we have one survey that says it's not hurting them, and it's based on 40 people. Because what's the truth? The truth is, they have this 40-person survey that they're pointing to, and then they have all of the other data that is exactly what Frances Haugen said, but she's not talking about that. It's not a denial. It's just, we also have this 40-person survey that's fine.
Instagram and the survey that the stolen survey that was shared in the testimony shows that the majority of teens, this was a very small survey, this is not peer-reviewed research,
right?
But that survey has been mischaracterized significantly, because what it actually says, and we've published it and people can go look at it for themselves, on the 12 issues for these teens who were already struggling with mental health issues, okay, Instagram, the majority of them said Instagram either makes things better or it doesn't have a material impact. How about—
so again, now we're multiple minutes into a 40-person survey, which is the only one she wants to talk about.
The minority. How about the minority? The 13% that said that it increased suicidal thoughts.
It's important for me to say that I spent my career as a criminal prosecutor and worked a lot on child safety. So even one teenager having a bad experience on Instagram.
So that's like sort of an appeal to authority fallacy, in a sense, kind of genetic fallacy. That may have been what she was doing in her previous role. That's not what she's doing now.
Is too many. And I can tell you that the hundreds of people at Facebook who actually do work on child safety, this former employee did not, but those who do work on child safety and work with dozens of external academics and child safety experts, this is our top priority. And
yes,
not only
who would possibly believe that? So there's a few more minutes to this interview. I encourage you to check it out. In a sense, it's genuinely surprising how poorly prepared these Facebook folks seem to be. At the same time, maybe this is prepared as you can be, but the facts aren't on your side. And that's fundamentally what the problem is here. So let me know your thoughts. I know Facebook has to do something. They're sort of these folks are in a sense, in an impossible position because they have to defend the indefensible. But this is not, I don't believe this issue is going away anytime soon. Hey, this is something very, very interesting. Rioting as a family affair. A mother and son rioted together on January 6th. Isn't that loving? Is that an act of love? Would we call it that? They've now both been arrested. Okay. New York mother and son arrested in theft of Pelosi's staff laptop during the Capitol riot. NBC News reporting that the FBI have arrested Marianne Mooney Rondon, 55, and her son, Raphael Rondon, 23, of Watertown, New York, in connection with a stolen laptop, according to court documents. This is actually out of Alaska, which is where they ended up finding the computer, apparently. A New York mother and son have been charged with theft in aiding the disappearance of a laptop belonging to the staff of Nancy Pelosi during the Trump riots, after the FBI initially raided a home 4,500 miles away from D.C. in Alaska looking for the computer. The FBI have arrested, as I mentioned, Marianne Mooney Rondon and her son Raphael Rondon in connection with that laptop, used only for presentations, according to court documents. Both also face other charges related to the riot at the Capitol. Raphael Rondon also faces possession of, classic, an unregistered sawed-off shotgun. Both were in federal court Friday in Syracuse, New York, released pending further proceedings. Now, there's even a question, you know, the Trumpists have been saying these folks are being treated so unfairly, held and sawed-off shotgun, rioting at D.C., and they're just released pending further proceedings. If anything, it seems these folks may be treated very lightly by the criminal justice system so far. Break into the Capitol, steal Pelosi's laptop, sawed-off shotgun charge, and just walk free pending further proceedings. Now, there's significant reform to be done here. But the point is, the argument that they're all being treated disproportionately unfairly for political reasons, clearly it doesn't apply to everybody. Capitol riot was well documented by those who took part. A tip to the FBI led them to the mother and son, according to a statement of facts documented by an FBI special agent. Mooney Rondon, that's the mom, allegedly admitted to being in both the Capitol the day of the riots, as well as Nancy Pelosi's conference room. She allegedly provided gloves or a scarf to a man to steal the laptop without leaving fingerprints. He asked, he said, give me, I don't know if it was gloves or a scarf I was wearing. And like I said, he scared me. The document quotes her as saying. There's also another interesting thing here that I think is relevant. Oh, the level of premeditation, okay? They want to push the idea that everything was spur of the moment. Look at this. Raphael Rondon, that's the son, told police officers that he and mother took the metro on January 6th, quote, because I'm not taking my car into the city, which the Capitol building I'm about to break into. Really undercuts the idea that this was some kind of spur of the moment thing. They seem to be saying we at least suspected that things were going to get sort of crazy. And so we deliberately didn't bring the car. We took public transit instead. At least some degree there of foreknowledge or premeditation. So we will follow this case as we're following other cases. But mother and son, can you imagine? And the stories about these individuals. I mean, listen, I'll be transparent. You read about many of these stories. They're just sad. It's sad people. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be held accountable. And in fact, we're going to talk about that in the next segment, which is there has not been nearly enough accountability for the Trump rioters. We'll get to that after this short break. My friends, they aren't even pretending anymore that they don't want more violence. They're threatening it openly. They're telling us, you know, we might have to do more violent stuff. I'm about to play video for you of former Trump strategist and a former Breitbart propagandist, Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon says, we aren't going to have 4,000 shock troops ready to go. We're going to have 20,000 shock troops ready to go so that we can take control of this country. They aren't even hiding it anymore. Let's take a look at the video. This is from Steve Bannon's program, The War Room, on Real America's Voice. Listen to this.
The opposition, particularly the opposition elite and all their soy boys and everything in Silicon Valley media, it's not a big part of the population. And they understand that. They understand it. The thing they fear is the righteous indignation of the working class in this country. And now they're seeing it. And that's why they're in meltdown. The story, I gave this talk to these appointees, and here's what I said. We're winning big in 2022. We're going to win big in 2024. We need to get ready now, right? We control this country. We got to start acting like it. And one way we're going to act like it, we're not going to have 4,000 ready to go. We're going to have 20,000 ready to go, and we're going to pick the 4,000 best and the most ready in every single department. And that's when we really start to deconstruct the administrative state. That's talking of CPAC. And they're always trying to destroy. No. We're trying to get an FDA worse.
Shock troops on standby. We control this country. We have to start acting like it. And as Zach Petrizzo reported, Steve Bannon continued by talking about the importance of spiritual warfare to his audience to defeat the enemy. This is exactly what the FBI should be investigating. This is exactly the type of thing that will rile people up and get them ready to do horrible things again. He's essentially calling for a, is militia even the right word? He's calling for people to be on standby to forcibly take slash remain in power. Now, I do want to sort of turn this around and take it as an opportunity to make a different point. If there aren't more and more serious consequences for the January 6th rioters, that will also implicitly encourage them to try again and to go crazier. This guy was the chief strategist for the president of the United States. This is not ending anytime soon. It's been less than a year since Trump, helped by senators, members of Congress, the MAGA people, people like Steve Bannon, they encouraged, they incited, they pushed for an attempt to try to take the election from the guy who actually won it, who was Joe Biden. Now, some of the dupes, some of the patsies, that's really what they are. They faced repercussions to some degree. A couple have been sentenced. Some are in the middle of trials. We talked earlier about the mother and son who were arrested. But none of the people who instigated it in Congress has lost a seat. Now, we haven't had elections yet. I understand that. We'll see if they lose seats. But the point is, it's not clear whether they will really have and suffer electoral consequences for their inciting, for the fomenting of what happened on January 6th. So, you know, we saw the lone wolf recently who tried to burn down a Democratic office in Texas. Things like that, as long as the right continues to, at a structural level, push this type of violent rhetoric, they're going to continue through this kind of stochastic terrorism that we've talked about before, creating these individual incidents. The individuals may face consequences. Some may not. Some may plead out. We don't know yet. But are they really lone wolves when you have this entire partisan apparatus, right-wing media apparatus, a strong contingent of Republicans in the House and Senate, when they're encouraging it? Are they really even lone wolves anymore, even if the physical act is one they carry out by themselves, as far as we know? There's this entire apparatus kind of vaguely encouraging this behavior, if not specifically. Now, some are asking, how is what Steve Bannon is saying not treasonous? Treason is sort of specific in terms of its legal definition, Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution, which says treason against the U.S. shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. The key is that treason means going against the U.S. and Americans as a whole. This is all kind of tinged enough about going against a political party and a movement that it's probably not sufficient to meet the definition of treason. It's more like a seditious conspiracy to overthrow the particular government that there is or something like that. But it doesn't make it any more morally acceptable. Let's make that completely clear. So we're going to see more of this action in real life because we're continuing to see more of the rhetoric on right wing media. And, you know, going back to my earlier segment on Russell Brand, without straight up being anti-vax, and Russell Brand probably isn't anti-vax, he has kind of threaded a line that is asking the right questions, as they love to say, to push people to become anti-vax on their own if they're not already. And if they are already, it just kind of encourages them and ingrains them in those beliefs. This is very similar with what we're seeing with Tucker calling about a real insurrection might be warranted. Steve Bannon talking about 20,000 shock troops and the like. This is real stuff, and it has real consequences in the real world. I went back and forth about whether to cover this next story, and I decided to ultimately. And there's a few points I want to make because there are kind of some bad takes coming from this story. So the story that has surfaced is, hey, Trump's finances are collapsing. Well, what's the evidence? Well, Forbes has this list of the richest 400 Americans that they publish. And Donald Trump is off the list for the first time in a really, really, really long time. So Donald Trump's financial situation is suffering. The article on Forbes says Donald Trump is worth an estimated $2.5 billion, leaving him $400 million short of the cutoff to make this year's Forbes 400 list of America's richest people. The real estate mogul is just as wealthy as he was a year ago when he was number 339 on the ranking, but he's down $600 million since the start of the pandemic. Tech stocks, cryptos, and other assets have thrived in the COVID era, but big city properties making up the bulk of Trump's fortune have languished, knocking the former president out of the nation's most exclusive club. They have this chart showing Trump's ranking in terms of wealth. And there was a point in the late 90s, rather, where Trump was like roughly in the top 100 wealthiest. Then in the early 2000s, he kind of got up close to the 50th wealthiest. And then it's been declining since 2015. So there's a few different things here that I think are important because there's some confusion about sort of what this means. We have to balance. On the one hand, it really shouldn't be insanely profitable to be president. Now, every president is going to get, at this point, they're going to get a nice book deal at minimum for sure. But remember that Donald Trump still made $1.6 billion over the 4 years that he was president. Now, he said he was going to be out of his businesses, blind trust, even though he didn't really understand what that is, the big presentation with a stack of paper. that was legal paper that we don't even know what it did. He made a killing during his presidency, so did his children. Trump still made $1.6 billion during his 4 years. At the same time, the presidency did some damage to Trump's brand. I mean, there's probably close to half the country on principle wouldn't go to a Trump hotel at this point in time. And so Trump's still filthy rich. He's just not quite as rich relative to this group of the richest Americans. Remember, he's still as wealthy as he was a year ago in terms of dollars. But because Trump is real estate heavy and a lot of these other rich people are more diversified, cryptos, stocks, other things, Trump in ranking has fallen behind. So you a lot of people are wanting to take just like a black and white view. Oh, so, well, if he's no longer in the richest 400, clearly he didn't rape and pillage for his personal wealth while he was president. Well, no, he benefited greatly from being president. Foreign dignitaries coming and staying at his hotels in order to ingratiate themselves with him, etc. He still made $1.6 billion during his presidency. His kids made a ton of money despite being sort of loosely or less loosely associated with the administration. I don't need the guy to be poor, but let's not allow him, importantly, to skirt responsibility and the due process of others because he's rich when it comes to saying, no, this person, I don't have to testify in this case and I don't have to provide documents in that case and all this other stuff because he used to be president or because he was president at the time. And the issue of exactly how rich he is relative to others is less important. So to some degree, many of Trump's businesses are struggling. Trump makes a ton of money from other things as well, licensing and different things. A lot of his hotels aren't doing so well. The value, property values, some have suffered. There's no doubt about that. But the right is pointing this and saying, you guys on the left were saying Trump was taking advantage of his position to make money, and he didn't really make money. No, he did. He still made $1.6 billion. It's just relative to the other 400 richest Americans, he comparatively fell slightly behind. $400 million a year while president is your full-time job is still very, very solid. Now, the other question is, has he been honest about his wealth all along? Did he ever really have? I think at one point he was claiming $3 or $4 billion. Who the hell knows? That's another question altogether. He's not an honest guy, that we know. But let's not read more into this than what we actually should, which is Trump did extremely well while being president, even though he said it was bad for him financially to be president. $1.6 billion is pretty good. But some other even richer, mostly men, but people, did even better than Trump. That's fundamentally what it comes down to. We don't really need to read too much more into it. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192 David P. Hey, this is kind of a sad voicemail. Longtime adversarial caller Troy York, who calls in under fake names all the time. He left a voice. His voicemails are increasingly disjointed, which I know says a lot for Troy York. He left one where it's not even really clear what point he's making or what he's talking about. Listen, it's kind of sad in a way. The trolling has gotten even less coherent.
David Pakman, COVID and the fake numbers are provided and manipulated to go after Republican politicians.
There's no evidence of that whatsoever.
Plain and simple, as we see with this garbage, with the media constantly attacking Ron DeSantis in Florida.
Remember, Florida is reporting numbers under Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. The idea that the left is reporting fake Florida numbers to make him look bad, it's the DeSantis Department of Health and DeSantis appointees that are all involved in managing the numbers that are reported. This is an incoherent allegation.
And this is Ryan Bosworth. I'm calling from.
This is not Ryan Bosworth. This is Troy York, of course.
Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. And if you're so smart, why don't you run for governor in Florida or
non sequitur, completely irrelevant.
Why don't you run for president in 2024?
Wasn't born in the U.S., not eligible to be president. What a bizarre and sad downfall of Troy York. He's some, we haven't played a Troy York voicemail for a while, but he's sometimes leaving 3, 4, 5 voicemails a day, all under supposedly different names, some of them criticizing me for things I haven't said. I think he's confusing this show with a different show, but a sad state of affairs for Troy York. Hope he does better. We've got a great bonus show for you today. There's a hospital that is saying it will be denying transplants to unvaccinated people in almost all situations. Can they do this legally? And what are the details? We will discuss. Also, the U.S. federal government has ordered Google to identify every single person who searched a sexual assault victim's name, address, and telephone number on the internet. They want to do this for investigative purposes. Is it legal, though? We will talk about it. And a third Sandy Hook parent has won a defamation lawsuit against conspiracy theorist Alex Jones from InfoWars. We'll talk about the repercussions and what is going to happen next. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Get instant access to the bonus show by becoming a member at joinpacman.com or becoming a patron at patreon.com/DavidPacman.
This is Danny Glover, and you're listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
We at WRCT Pittsburgh do not condone the illegal duplication of copyrighted material. But if you happen to own all the tracks we played and would like a copy of them, just FTP to FTP. Due to a request by computing services, the remainder of this announcement cannot be...
You're tuned to WRCT Pittsburgh's automated...
Hi, you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, home of... Oh, crap. We're not really home of anything, are we?
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to WRCT in Pittsburgh, you know, go Steelers.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Soul is next.
We don't actually have the legal documentation to back that up.
This is Ian McCulloch, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
We'll give you total control over our lives. Everyone shuts the hell up.
We're Hydra! WRCT Pittsburgh!
You're listening to WRCT, friends of the FCC. Good friends, good times, and eggnog.
This is Brad Yoder, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
This is Satan. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Soon, pay toilets will take over the world, and everyone, everywhere will listen to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Hello, I'm Meg Lee Chin, and when I'm in town, I like to listen to WRCT 88.3 FM. FM.
WRCT, this is the place that sets the pace for Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Felicia Collins from Late Show with David Letterman, and you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh, we're always here for you.
WRCT Pittsburgh, we love monkeys.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
But the most astonishing thing was when one of the justices asked the government lawyer, will you allow Abu Zubaydah to testify? It was a stunning question. And the answer was even more stunning. Well, he's being held in Guantanamo. And the justice said, why doesn't he file a habeas petition? Well, he has filed a habeas petition 14 years ago.
The torture cover-up continues. We'll look at Wednesday's Supreme Court oral arguments about Guantanamo prisoner Abu Zubaydah, who was waterboarded over 80 times at a secret CIA black site. The Biden administration argues key details about his torture are state secrets, including the role of two psychologists, Mitchell and Jessen, who designed the torture program. We'll get the latest. Then to Ethiopia.
CNN can reveal, based on documentary evidence and witnesses' accounts, Ethiopian Airlines has been transporting weapons between Ethiopia and Eritrea since the beginning of the war in Ethiopia that has seen thousands killed.
We'll speak to award-winning CNN reporter Naima Abagia about how Ethiopia used its flagship commercial airlines, Ethiopian Airlines, to transport weapons during the war in Tigray. But first, a federal judge has temporarily blocked the near-total ban on abortion in Texas. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Texas, a federal judge has temporarily blocked the state's near-total ban on abortions, granting the Justice Department's emergency request to halt the law while courts consider its legality. In his ruling, Judge Robert Pittman slammed the Texas ban's unconstitutionality, writing, quote, "This court will not sanction one more day of this offensive deprivation of such an important right." We'll have more on the story after headlines. On Capitol Hill, Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said Wednesday he would allow an emergency extension of the federal debt limit that would put off the risk of a U.S. default until December. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says a vote is likely today. The World Health Organization's endorsed a first-of-its-kind vaccine against malaria for children in sub-Saharan Africa. The WHO said the vaccine proved to be safe and reduced severe malaria by 30% in children enrolled in a pilot program in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus called the vaccine a major victory in the fight against one of the world's worst infectious diseases.
This long-awaited malaria vaccine is a breakthrough for science, child health, and malaria control. Using this vaccine in addition to existing tools to prevent malaria could save tens of thousands of young lives each year.
It's the first vaccine ever approved for use against a parasitic disease. Malaria claims the lives of about 500,000 people each year, half of whom are children in Africa. The United States reported more than 2,500 COVID-19 deaths Wednesday, even as new cases continue to fall from a summer peak. With the latest deaths, the U.S. has now recorded more COVID fatalities in 2021 than in all of 2020. The White House said Wednesday it would spend $1 billion to purchase at-home rapid antigen tests in response to an ongoing nationwide shortage. Los Angeles City Council has approved a measure requiring people entering indoor public spaces and large outdoor gatherings to provide proof of vaccination. In Colorado, the UC Health Hospital system says it will deny organ transplants to patients who refuse to get vaccinated for COVID-19.